Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for August 5th, 2017. I'm Mima Nadeiri alongside Parsa Sammy, and we're here this week to preview the Rogers Cup. This week's podcast is brought to you by Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for all your ticket and traveling needs to the upcoming U.S. Open, as well as the Stowe Mountain Lodge Classic. This week's co-host is Parsa Sammy, as always. Parsa, how are you today, my friend?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing very good. I mean, listen, I'll be honest with you, man. The weather here has been garbage in Toronto. It's been probably one of the worst summers I can remember in recent history. Hopefully next week, actually today with the quali starting at the Rogers Cup, with the ladies in town, it's going to be a good week for everybody to enjoy, as well as in Montreal, and then next week in Cincy, and then moving forward to the U.S. Open, which I'm looking forward to attending and checking out. Hopefully everything works out. But it's been an interesting summer. I mean, since we spoke last, Parsa, as well as with everybody out there, we've had, notable absences now for the rest of the year will be Novak Djokovic, who earlier this week had said, listen, you know what, I'm done, for 2017. Elbow injury has taken him out. He's going to, look to target Australian Open for next year. Stan Wawrinka, a couple of days ago, also said that he won't be playing for the rest of the season. Remember, he's the defending U.S. Open champion, so a lot of points coming off for him. He's going to look back, regroup for next year. And then Andy Murray, still a big question mark over his head. He's not playing this week anyways, and he's defending finalist in Cincy. But that hip problem, he was in the gym working out, so he wants to play. I just don't know how effective he's going to be, and he's got, a landslide of points coming off, so he doesn't play, he's going to drop, significantly. And then on the women's side, we have Sharapova, who once again is injured again. Her left arm is an injury. It took her out of Stanford last week after a match, not playing in Montreal this week, in Toronto this week. And then who knows what's going on for Cincy with her for next week. And then, as we know, Serena is still, waiting the birth of her first child. So we wish her well with that. So a lot of big name players not playing this summer and potentially for the rest of the year. So that just, Parsa, strikes opportunity all over the place. And you got to put a lot of players now in pole position to really be factors both this week in Canada in both respective tournaments, next week in Cincy, and then in the ensuing U.S. Open. So are there any stories, Parsa, from what I mentioned that really strike out to you before we get into a little bit of that calendar discussion, which I was talking about before on air?
It exactly where it is. To be honest with you, there's not much of a it's a little bit of a lull, and so we're in this sort of go between or in between in a build up of and a hype for the U.S. Open, and here we are, Nima. I mean, there's not much to add.
Yeah, and we're in a position now where even though this week we're missing some big names. I mean, Parsa, I'm not taking anything away from Djokovic, from Murray, from Stan, but I mean, I don't know if you saw some of those pictures of Federer practicing in Montreal. He hasn't played there, for 4 or 5 years. The place was completely packed. That's for
what a treat, right?
That's a practice session. You know what I'm saying? That's not even a match. They've already said he's playing Wednesday night. Nadal's playing Tuesday. Sorry, Federer's playing Wednesday day. Nadal's playing Wednesday Tuesday night. I mean, these guys are just, they transcend. And I don't know. I mean, this has nothing to do with the success of a Djokovic or Murray. But I don't think they can bring the same crowds. I really don't think they can do it. And that's nothing to do. Djokovic might end up winning 25 Grand Slams, and he might be the best player ever. But I don't think he can bring that type of a crowd. That's my honest opinion. And same with Murray. They just don't have that type of overall transcendency that just, I mean, everybody's just all over these guys. And we'll see. I mean, you know, the future is still, you know, a long way away. You know, Djokovic might play, you know, plus 36, 37, and he could have the exact same aura around him. But at the moment, I just don't think he's there. And that's why Federer is just on another planet with Riscard. I mean, and then the year that he's had. And so it's just, you know, off the charts, and it's a great, great treat for all the fans in Montreal. I'm not going to lie, I wish it was in Toronto so I could, you know, check that out and see how it is. But, you know, we'll go check out the ladies and see how they do. But, I mean, something that I want to get to, Parsa, that's really been bothering me, actually, from about a week and a half now, is, you know, the ATP calendar. More so the ATP calendar than the WTA. I think the WTA actually, in terms of their calendar, they have it a little bit more sorted out than the men do. So we have, this is the US Open series. So Wimbledon ends. I think immediately, with the exception of Newport, which, you know, is an amazing tournament because it's in the States. So we're leading up to the US Open, which is an American tournament. I think every tournament should be in the States. There's no reason for a tournament this week to be in Kitzbühel. Does anybody know that Philip Kohlschreiber won the event today? I don't think so. I mean, I put that up on Twitter. I talked about it. Nobody, you know, I say a couple things about Federer. Everybody's, you know, retweeting it 20 times. I say something about Kohlschreiber. It was crickets. You know what I'm saying? I'm talking about stuff in Los Cabos. Maybe a little bit because Kokkinakis and Sam Querrey, you know, a very popular Australian coming back from injury, and you got Querrey. But last week in Hamburg, 500-level event, Parsa. Leonardo Meyer, you know, God bless his soul, super happy for him. You know, the scenes after where he got his newborn, you know, baby, and he was kissing him, and he was super happy. He won a 500-level event, you know, a ton of cash. He's back in the top 50 against, you know, Florian Meyer, who's this crafty German veteran. And but is that, you know, Parsa, we got to look at this. This is a 500-level event. You know, it's so hard to win these tournaments. Leonardo Meyer now, Parsa, has two Masters 1000, two 500-level events, both in Hamburg. You know how much, you know how many Milos Raonic has? One. You know how much Cilic has? One. You know the likes Dimitrov has? One. These guys are perennial top 10 players, right? They can't even win two of these events. So if we're talking about it from a status standpoint and not necessarily how strong the field was, you know, like, this is how you got to look at these things, right? Like, why is there a tournament in Hamburg last week on clay? How is that part of the US Open series? It's not, right? They have the money. I'm sure that Michael Steek is sitting there just scratching his head saying, you know, what the heck is going on here, right? I can't get anybody to come to this tournament. Why not put that tournament in the middle of the clay court season, even have, you know, three or four tournaments in 1 week? I promise you, you're going to get a lot of players there because you're going to have a higher amount of prize money. You're going to have more points on hand. And it's an actual preparation for the French Open, even though we all know that that tournament, in terms of the suitability, because, you know, the climate is not the greatest there in Hamburg, especially in the springtime, is not suitable for the French, but neither is Madrid, right? You see that term. Obviously, it's Masters 1000. It's compulsory. Everybody shows up. So they've got to do a real, like, reform of this, because I really think that it's hurting the sport. And I talked to Nick Lester about this and a couple of other people, you know, that I wanted to get their opinions on this part. So now we're going to hear yours in a second. But can they fill up a tournament in Chicago? Can they make the tournament in Atlanta a bigger one? Can they make the tournament this week in Washington an even bigger draw? I think they can. You know what I mean? Like, why not, you know, magnify these weeks, you know, for the American tournaments? You know what I mean? Like, put a tournament in LA again, put one in Orlando, put one in Texas, put them in some places where we can get some fans and call it the US Open series and make it a real, you know, hometown feeling. Like, nobody cares what's going on in Kitzbühel right now or in Hamburg. We got to be very blunt about this, right? Because I really think that this is hurting the sport, especially on the men's side. And I think you got to really zero in and harness all of your skills and focus on the US Open series, because that's where it's at. Even put maybe another tournament in Canada, right? So, like, you know, like, for instance, you know, we have the men in Montreal this week. Put maybe a smaller tournament the week before in Toronto. Maybe put a 250 here, right? And then the women will come the week after, and then they kind of switch, you know what I mean? Then have the women in Montreal or something like that the week after on a smaller event. I don't know, but those are just, some brainstorming. But I think overall, there definitely needs to be a reform because I definitely think that it's hurting the sport. What are your thoughts on that?
The practicality of it is what you're debating.
Yes.
The reality of it is that these tournaments, through all the changes that they've gone, are owned as corporations, as individual entities. And
Yes.
so people own, so whoever is organizing it in Hamburg owns that event, and sort of, not sort of, they have to get the approval of the week slot from the ATP. And so I don't know how much control is going on between it. That's the difficult thing about tennis. It's not like it's the ATP World Tour and they control the 30, 40, 50, 60 events that they have per year. It's that they really oversee those events, but they don't actually have actual control over those events. And I think that's where tennis has really hurt. It's like the Grand Slams are separate. They're run by the ITF. It has nothing to do with the ATP World Tour. So it's very, tennis is very much just a hodgepodge of different entities coming together, and there
Yes.
has to be some sort of mutual ground. And I think that's where the struggle is. And so you get some head scratchers, and it's kind of strange to have a clay court tournament in Hamburg, Germany, when everyone else is prepping for the U.S. Open. And like you said, Milos Raonic is not going to go and play on clay because it's not ideal preparation. But Leonardo Mayer, who's trying to revive his career and feed his family, is definitely going to take that risk, because who cares if he loses first round of the Open if he wins a 500?
Exactly. He's good for the year now.
Right. And so you're not getting, exactly as you were insinuating, you're not getting that big strong build up towards the US Open. Instead, you're getting, guys that are just trying to survive and do what they have to do, but the end product is you're not getting that build up in the news. Now, in terms of things in the United States, it's hard to run tournaments in the United States because it costs a lot of money, and frankly, there's not a ton of interest, Nima. Tennis has taken a backseat to many other sports here, and it's not the prominent thing it used to be. Obviously, the U.S. Open does great, Indian Wells does great, but even Miami has been struggling as a Masters Series event, even though it's a great event and people say great things about it.
Yes.
They threaten to move and do all, they're contemplating bringing it to Orlando and all sorts of things.
Yes.
But we don't exactly know how it works out. So to add more events, in little quaint places like Newport, Rhode Island, for that event, that's a historic event and will always be there because the community supports it.
Yes.
Atlanta has got some decent support there. It would be nice. I like the idea of having an event in Chicago. How great would that be?
Yes,
A
an
great
awesome
tennis
city.
community
Yeah,
with great
exactly.
junior tennis players. Los Angeles, I was there for that one. That one was really didn't work out very well. It was hard to draw people, hard to draw players to come out there and play,
Yes.
for whatever reason. It's LA, but I don't know why. But those people are missing tennis as well. So I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I agree with you. There needs to be a little bit of pressure and a revisiting of how the schedule actually works out.
Well, I mean, one way to do it is why does Indian Wells, if you remember partially, 10, 15 years ago, Indian Wells was worse than Miami, right? But then Larry Ellison, stepped in and said, listen, guys, I love this game. You know what I mean? For my ego or for whatever it is, I'm going to make this the best thing, since whatever. And that's exactly what he's done. And now it's like the place to be. Everybody wants to play that tournament. Everybody wants to win that tournament. So why is the US Open the way it is? I mean, last year, I mean, at parts, I've been going to the US Open 10 years in a row. And last year I was there, I was like, wow, they've done an amazing job with this place. And I'm sure this year when I step foot in on the grounds again, I'm going to say even, wow, even more, right? So that's kind of what you need. You need the USTA, they're making so much money, right, from the US Open. They got to step in and say, listen, we're going to help out with some of these, the branding, all of that stuff with these smaller tournaments. And really give it like a series, you know what I mean? Like, because right now, what do you have? You have Atlanta, you have Stanford, you have obviously Montreal and Toronto, and then you have next week in Cincy, and then you have Winston-Salem, and I believe a smaller women's event as well too, and then you have U.S. Open. So there's not a lot going on there, in my opinion. Like, look at the clay court season, right? from when Wimbledon ends to the start of the U.S. Open, you could do some good stuff in there, but you're not. You know what I mean? Everybody's like taking a month off, doing this, doing that. You know, I'm not saying that, you know, the Federer and the Nadals and the Serenas of the world have to play the week after the Wimbledon final. They'll still play their, you know, either, you know, Canada and Cincy, one of the two or whatever. But everybody else, like the Jack Sox and the Kyrgioses and the, you know, Svitolinas of the world, they're going to play the rest of these tournaments because they need the points, you know, they need the exposure, and they're not at that level yet, right? So you can do it. You need passionate people with a lot of money to step in and do some damage there. I mean, Jan Tyriak, the guy's a billionaire. And believe me, he wants to make money. And Madrid is not pulling the type of cash that he wants it to. And I've heard from a lot of good sources that he wants to even sell that event. So why not take your cash, come to America, and do something good here? You know what I'm saying? And make a massive tournament. Make a couple 500s. Like, put another 500 with Cincy. You know what I'm saying? Pardon me, with Washington this week. They do it when it's Halle and Queens Club, right? Why not do like a Washington in Orlando or Chicago? Do you know what I'm saying? And make this amazing tournament with beautiful facilities. They can do it. And I'm sure that, you know, the cities would love that and pump it out. And it will work. I'm pretty sure it will work. Somewhere like Chicago, I think, is a fantastic venue for that. But again, we're playing in Kitzbühel this week. It's amazing to me. Like, there's no uniformity with any of this structure that's happening, right? Like, I get it, there's guys who want to play on clay, like Cole Schreiber and Leonardo Meyer and whatever, but, you know, they can play on hard courts too. And there's enough time to play on clay. Go play a challenger, do you know what I'm saying? And then, or play during the clay court season. But right now, this should be prime time, U.S. time. And I'm saying that as a Canadian. Right, I'm not even saying that as an American, right? So I definitely think that something has to happen, and it has to happen quick, because this is not doing anything for the sport. And if anything, it's only getting worse. Players are playing even less because the best players are getting older. And we've seen they're all over 30 now. They're being super selective with their schedules. So what you're seeing is a super watered-down product, you know, throughout the rest of these events. And it's just not benefiting anybody because they're like, okay, great. Cole Schreiber won today. Leonardo Meyer. Nobody's even going to remember that in 2 weeks. You know what I'm saying? But if you give them memorable matches like we saw last night with Tommy Paul and Nishikori, you know what I mean? Some of the other matches that we've seen this week, then you're going to get it. But, you know, that Sharapova's first round win was a great one in Stanford before she had to pull out. You know, we need tennis like that, and we need it stateside. Because the coverage is pretty good. ESPN's there, Tennis Channel's there, Tennis TV is there. WTA just, you know, they announced that they're doing WTA, like their tennis channel now too. So, I mean, it's there. But we need, you know, you need the exposure. So, I think that's pretty much it from my front and my rant on the schedule. And I guess now we can get into the draws. If you have nothing else to add to that before we begin, Parsa.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, thinking about it, it's also... You know, when do they get to play in Europe as well? You know, there is obviously Wimbledon and Roland Garros, but
yes.
What about all the other countries in Europe? You know, tennis is very, very popular there. So
yes.
I think sort of where the popularity is where the tennis is right now, and maybe it'll change again in a few years. Who knows?
Well, and you made a fantastic point, too, that most of the, you know, the best players in the world right now are European. You know what I mean? Look at all the Grand Slam winners. Apart from Serena... You know, in the last 10 years, you know, tennis has been dominated by Europe. There hasn't been any male U.S. players that won a slam. In terms of American players, except for Serena completely dominating, there's been nobody else. And that's pretty much it, right? So you have a situation where, I mean, obviously you're going to have a lot of these events in Europe because most of the players are playing from there, Eastern Europe and Europe. So, I mean, I definitely can see why. That's a fantastic point that you made. But I still think you have to centralize it around where you are. It's like, Parsa, let me ask you a question. How come during the clay court season, there's not a clay court tournament in Orlando? Like, they have the one in Houston, right? So they do that. And then that's just like the same week with like Casablanca and stuff. And then after that, that's done. You go to Monte Carlo, you do all the, you know what I mean? And then how come like 2 weeks before where there's like the BMW Open in Munich, how come that week there's not a tournament in LA or in Texas or in...
Yeah, even that being said, the Houston is on clay. So why isn't, even if it is in Kitzbühel, why isn't it on a hard court?
There you go. So that's what I'm saying. Like, there's no uniformity for any of these things. It's just like you said, it's just in the best interest of the Kitzbühel tournament. And for today, that Cole Schreiber won. And last week for Michael Steak and whoever owns that event, and Leonardo Meyer that won. But in terms of overall tennis's health, especially on the men's side, I'm not seeing good things, man. I see, like, what Larry Ellison has done for Indian Wells, man. Everybody should say, listen, man, amazing job. Yes, the guy's a billionaire. Whatever he is, who cares? I mean, he has brought that tournament to completely star-studded status. Everybody wants to be there. Everybody's talking about it. The coverage is through the roof. It's amazing. And you need to do those type of things to get these type of results, right? You know, Brad Gilbert always had a great saying. He said that if you put in a 2-cent effort, you're going to get a 2-cent result. So you put in the work, you put in the money, you're going to get the result, right? It just goes hand in hand. So I think that, you know, you have to have that type of vision, and you need the pocketbook and the checkbook to do it. But I think if it's there, you're going to see some great results. So listen, man, all I can do is pray that, you know, it ends up working out. And hopefully in the coming years, we see, you know, a little bit of a reform with all of these things, and tennis goes in the right direction. So Parsa, with that said, my friend, let's jump into the Rogers Cup draw. Let's start with the men in Montreal. Rafa Nadal, Parsa, is the number one seed here as a result of Murray and Djokovic not playing. Rafa takes on either Čorić or a qualifier. If Nadal reaches the semifinals here, Parsa, he becomes the number one player in the world again. And you have to bet that pretty certain, I think, that's going to happen. I mean, that's
unbelievable.
Unbelievable, but we got to believe it. But I think it might shift again, because the number two seed is a guy that we'll talk about in a second. So Rafa's got Čorić. He's got either Shapovalov, Dutra Silva, Del Potro, Isner, Goffin, and Raonic lurking in his quarter here. Do you see anybody there having, you know, the firepower to get through him? I mean, Isner's been playing well. You know, let's talk about Isner for a second. He wins Newport. He wins Atlanta. Not the first time that he's done that, right? He loves these tournaments in the States. Another guy who I think, if he was listening to this podcast, he would give us a 5-star rating, in my opinion, because he would be all over playing more tournaments in the States. And, I mean, Isner maybe, because he's serving out of a tree. I mean, that match against Delpo is going to be a super tough one. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. Raonic,
he doesn't do well in Canada, right?
No, he doesn't do well in Canada. You're right, because it's not the States. So he doesn't maybe get the same vibes. I don't know what it is. But Raonic is a guy who definitely he's going to want to do some damage here. You know, Daniel Medvedev, Parsa, for me, is a guy who you got to watch out for. He's playing, you know, one of my favorite players on a tour, Adrian Mannarino, who's had a nice run lately. He plays him in the first round. But, you know, Danny Medvedev's a guy who very underrated. He's got a massive game. You know, he's not afraid of, you know, bending that, you know, that rule book as much as possible to get an edge. And, you know, he's ready to go. And he's already defeated some big name players throughout this year. He made, I believe, the quarters, you know, this week in Washington as well. He beat a couple guys like Dimitrov. He did really good. So he beat Steve Johnson too. So I think he could give Raonic, you know, a tussle if they meet up in the second round. Goffin's coming back from injury, so we'll see how, you know, what unfolds for him. But you got to go for me with Rafa, you know, getting through to the semifinals. What's your take on this quarter here?
I mean, it's a little tricky. You know, Rafa's is got to be able to conform to the hard court, and he is vulnerable on the faster surfaces, and so.
And Parsa, sorry, I just want to say one quick thing, man, and I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's really important for everybody out there to remember, because, you know, these tournaments flip-flop between Toronto and Montreal, but Montreal is also the faster of the two. So that as well doesn't bode that well for Nadal, so I just want to throw that in there.
Right, and I'm not 1,000% sure that he gets there to the semi. You know, Milos being the guy in Canada and having the big enough game to upend Nadal, I think maybe he could do something there. Who knows? Okay. But it remains to be seen, and I'm not sure. But I think that Milos here is in the part of his career where he he needs to start taking titles in his hometown where he's going to get the hometown support. And I'm going to go out on a limb there. I'm going to say Raonic into the semis.
Okay. I mean, that would, everybody would love to see that for sure. Now, Parsa, we got, you know, we're going now into quarter number two, and we got to spend a minute here on Alex Zverev because, I mean, how impressive was he today? I was actually just watching the replay of his match with Nishikori. I mean, he just blew him off the court. And I know Nishikori's played, you know, burned midnight oil this weekend in Washington, played a couple, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning matches. He had that tough one against Tommy Paul last night. But nevertheless, I mean, this guy with Juan Carlos Ferrero now in his corner, a new addition. You know, he's also got Jess Green, who's got him in tip-top shape. I mean, watch out for this guy. I mean, with Wawrinka, Murray potentially, and Djokovic for sure out of the U.S. Open, you have to, without a shadow of a doubt, as I like to say, put Zverev right up there as the top four or five favorites to win the U.S. Open this year. I know he's still young. I know he's not physically that strong. But when you look at the injuries for the other top guys, how well he's playing at the moment, and you got to think that hard courts are exactly his best surface, watch out for this guy, man, because he's a handful to deal with right now. He's just hitting the cover off of every shot, serving amazing. And if he stays healthy, I mean, watch out for him. He's got Kevin Anderson tomorrow in the Washington final, and then let's see what he does here. So, you know, he's got either Braden Schnurr, Canadian boy, or Richard Gasquet in his first match. We got TFO. Let's see what he does. I hope he does well this week because he's really fun to watch. We got Kyrgios, who just looked awful last week in Washington, lost to, you know, Sangren. What's his first name? Tennessee Sangren? Yeah.
Not Tennessee, but yeah, tennis.
Tennis.
Like, literally.
Yeah. Tennis Sangren. And then he's got Troitsky first round. That's going to be tough. And he just doesn't look to me, Parsa, like he's fit. And it's amazing because, you know, you saw him in the gym putting up all these, you know, Instagram stories like I'm working out and all that stuff. But I'm like, listen, man, if you had to withdraw from your first round at Wimbledon. You had a hip problem, right? So from losing in the first round, retiring from Wimbledon to playing in the first round of Washington, that's a good month off. So you're coming in and you got a shoulder injury from what? You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't make sense to me. Like, so if you're breaking down that much, you need to take some time off. And Parsa, everybody out there listening, you know, and everybody, you know, prior to this podcast knows that I've been a massive supporter of Nick Kyrgios from like maybe 2013 till today. And I still am. But I'm saying that, listen, if you're still injured for the last 3 months, it's not going away. And if you've just picked up a new injury out of nowhere, and you haven't even played a match, and now you have a shoulder injury, that to me is a massive head scratcher, right? Like, what's going on there? There's no rhyme or reason to that. So we'll see how he does this week. He just put up a really funny tweet. Somebody asked him, he said, listen, man, I'm just wondering if I can come hit with you for 5 minutes during your practice, you know, on your practice court. And he said, yeah, no problem. And he said, in fact, whoever's there, don't even ask, just come hit with me on my practice court. So that's two things for me. Is that from a fan experience? You can't get any better than that, right? But if you're a serious player right now, getting ready to build up for the U.S. Open, and you know that, you know, you're in prime shape and you're ready to go, you're not saying that, right? And as bad as that sounds in terms of from the fan perspective, you know that he's not in good shape. He's probably just showing up here because he has to play. He's going to stay in the States anyways because he wants to play the U.S. Open. He's probably going to lose to Troitsky first round, and he's just going to hit with some kids, which is amazing for the kids. And that, from that perspective, I think it's awesome. But from the perspective of his career and where he is today, I don't think it's where he needs to be. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, how much of it is a ploy? How much of it is him just sort of appeasing the fans? I have trouble trying to understand Nick Kyrgios, to be honest with you. Yeah. You know, super talented guy, but not very professional yet. And you know, he's trying to get there. And I really don't know what's going on there, and who's advising him, or if anyone's advising him. Maybe that's the problem. But it's not looking good for him right now, and something that is concerning. But you know, we can only wait and see and how this all plays out and what he does. I mean, you just know that he's not going to be able to have a big result until he takes himself a little bit more serious. And so, you know, like you said, for the fans, it's amazing, and he's accessible, which is amazing.
Yes.
You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, like you said, you know, why are you getting hurt every you know, tournament you play? And there seems to be this issue with a lack of effort as you play match in and match out. And that's just not the ask right now to become a top player in the world. It's just not. You know, the top guys are the top guys because they're the most consistent and they play at their very best level for more time than anyone else does. So that's the ask. That's what you have to do. And, you know, Kyrgios not ready for that yet. That's it.
Yeah, and I think as a result of that, we got Tsonga lurking here, who hasn't really played that much tennis lately. You know, Karen Khachanov, super dangerous. I mean, if you look at a guy, Parsa, from the young guys, in terms of their physicality, I don't think you can get better than Karen Khachanov. I mean, this guy is just like a beast, man. I don't know if you've seen his quads. I mean, the guy is just built, and he's like 20 years old. The guy looks like he's 26, 27 years old, right? Like he's completely filled out, and the guy's just a monster out there. And I fully think that he can take out, you know, Corina Busta in the first round. You got Tsonga, who again, depending on where he is physically, is going to be tough for him. Even though he won the tournament in Toronto in 2014, I mean, he just served the lights out that week. He beat everybody: Djokovic, Murray, Federer. I mean, he just had a record week for him. So we know what he's capable of and what kind of tennis he can play. But he's going to have his plate full in the first round against either Gilles Muller, who's playing the tennis of his life, and subsequently Sam Querrey, also playing his tennis of his life. He's playing, actually starting up right now in the Los Cabos final against Kokkinakis. So his opportunity, he won Acapulco this year, earlier, and now he's got a chance to, you know, do the double in Mexico. So Querrey's going to be coming in off of a high, and Muller's been playing really well. So I don't know how well Tsonga does here. But with that said, I got to go with Zverev to come out of this quarter and make the semifinals. How about yourself?
Absolutely terrific pick, and someone that I can't go against Zverev in any way, shape, or form. I want to say TFO. Nima, I'm getting a weird feeling about TFO. Call me crazy, but I think he's wants to make a run here. I wouldn't be surprised if he's not in the top 20 by the end of the year. Something is brewing there. I'm not quite sure what it is, and it is a hunch. But for now, the informed guy for this tournament is going to be Zverev for me, for sure.
Okay. Yeah, and it could be also, I don't know, Parsa, if you know, but he's also dating a Canadian girl. So maybe he's got from Toronto. So she's playing tennis at Clemson, I believe, somewhere like that. So she's, you know, that may be his tie to doing well here. See how it unfolds. Maybe. So we got your best friend Dimitrov, who's ranked number 7. He's in the quarter number 3 with Dominic Thiem, who showed me some good stuff. I mean, really good sportsmanship against losing to Kevin Anderson this week in Washington. I mean, you know what's interesting for me, Parsa? I mean, you look at Thiem throughout all of these years, and everybody knows him as this clay court guy. And he's got these loopy strokes and, you know, very powerful windups that are not very efficient for a hard court. But, you know, you look at his serve, which is kind of molded, you know, in a very clay court fashion to hit a lot of kick, and he's got an amazing kick serve. But, I mean, Parsa, this guy was pumping and serving at 141, 143 miles an hour. Like, that's some serious gas, man. And he's not the tallest guy. You know what I'm saying? And he can hit the ball massive. Like, he was hitting his ground strokes high 80s, first serves, you know, high 130s, low 140s. There's no reason why. I mean, if he can just stand a little bit closer to the baseline, work on that, he's going to be very dangerous on these hard courts. And I think he's going to have a decent tournament here. I mean, Lucas Pouille has been playing, you know, not that great lately. Burdick, he's going to be around. I mean, we got to watch out for him because he's one of those guys who can sneak through here again, right? You know what I mean? Like, he lost yesterday to Kokkinakis in the semis, but, you know, his stuff being very flaky to make it through to the semifinals here. And I think if it's not Thiem, I think Jared Donaldson can also upset Lucas Pouille in the first round there. I like what I'm seeing from Donaldson. I told you that earlier this year, Parsa. Very tenacious guy. Excellent tennis IQ. You know, and he looks like he's into it. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't take it for granted. He looks like he works hard. Not the best athlete out there. And I've mentioned that before too. But from, you know, from his IQ, and he's a smart guy. And I think he does what he needs to do in his prep and his on-court, you know, his demeanor, I think is very solid. And I like what I see from him. But I'm going to go with, you know, with the Burdick to make the semis here. What's your call?
Very interesting. You know, it's tough with anything with Burdick in there. First of all, has he, I just remind me, I could be off, but has he won a tournament finally?
Who's that?
Burdick.
And has, what do you mean, has he won a tournament this year?
Just an ATP event in general. I remember for a long time he hadn't won anything.
Yes, you know? Yeah, he I think he got one late last year, because he had appendicitis, right? So he had some stuff going on there, but I mean, that's why he's dropped. He's number 10 here, but you know, that's because also Wawrinka's not here, Cilic is not here, you know, Djokovic is not here. There's a,
how many titles does he have in his career?
How many titles does he have in his career? That's something. If you just give me 1 second, I can
it's
look.
It's interesting, and I'll talk while you're figuring that one out, yeah. Dima. But you know, with Burdick, it's something that you sort of always never know what you're going to get. Although this is not a slam, this is a Masters Series event. And so I don't give him the good old reliable here.
Yes.
In that, you know, a guy like Dimitrov likes to make a little bit of a run here and sort of say, I am good. And then Parsa goes to watch him at the US Open and he throws in a stinker. And so,
yes.
Just to piss me off again, I think Dimitrov in the semis for me here.
Yeah, we got Burdick with 13 career titles,
20, okay, I was mistaken.
Over $28 million in prize money. So he's
not bad, right?
He's done pretty good. Just prize money, without, you know, the stuff that he's got from H&M and from Adidas now. So, and Nike before that.
No Masters Series, right?
And I believe he has one in Paris, way back when, in like 2004. And just to give everybody a quick heads up, who's listening, because we'll have this published. Query up 1-0 in the finals against Kokkinakis. Lost Cobbles.
That's big Nima.
Yeah. So that's, you know, just starting off there. Yeah, so I mean, for me, you're gonna go with Grigor. Listen, man, you know, Grigor is a super talented guy, very fit. I just don't think he knows how he needs to play. I think he's got too many shots, and he hasn't found those patterns that just work for him. You know what I mean? He's using his athleticism, doing the splits, doing all this crazy stuff out there, but it's maybe not that necessary. You know what I mean? Just stick, you know, with the meat and bones of your game. And just go out there and, you know, and get it done. So we'll see how it goes. And, you know, we wish him all the best here. So we got quarter number 4 now. Back in action. Hot off of his 19th Grand Slam title at Wimbledon. We have Roger Federer coming in as the number 2 seed. He's got Kai Nishikori as the number 5 seed. The highest ranked player that he would play in this quarter. We also got Steve Johnson, Gael Monfils, Ryan Harrison, Batista Agut, Jack Sock, Ferrer, Edmund, Pospisil, and my buddy Peter Polansky. Got to give him a shout-out, making 3 straight Challenger finals. Wasn't able to win any of them, but still nevertheless in the finals. Also got main draw this week in Los Cabos. Won his first match and lost in the third set tiebreaker to Kokkinakis after like 2 hours and 15 minutes. So it took him all the way to the wire, playing the tennis of his life. I think he might be able to take out Pospisil, but then I completely expect Federer to demolish him in that second round, even though he's a good friend and I wish him all the best. But I mean, that's going to be a tough one for him to overcome. If it's Pospisil, then I think it could be a little bit closer, like something like a 6-4, 7-5, just because Vasek's got a much bigger game. But nevertheless, I mean, can we really go against Arfed here? Now, Parsa, what's the mindset here, man? Like, was it like... I remember Federer saying after, you know, as he was entering the grass court season, as he was getting ready to go to Stuttgart, where he subsequently lost to Tommy Haas, which will be one of the, you know, shockers of the season, he said that there's no more breaks for me here. Too many breaks. I'm feeling great. Full schedule from here on in. So is that something that he wanted to stick with? Because he had a really easy Wimbledon. Let's think about that for a second. He didn't lose a set. I mean, he pretty much rolled everybody. The finals was a joke. semis was not that bad hard. I mean, like, he didn't have any tough matches. So, and he's had a few weeks off now. And it was it a decision, like, do you think if he wins Montreal, does he play Cincy still, in your opinion? Or is he kind of showing up here, getting maybe two, three matches, and then still play Cincy, have a week off, then go to US Open? He's going to be what, 3 days? He's going to be 36. So, in your opinion, if you're his coach, do you tell him to play the two warm-ups, physical matches, 2 weeks on hard courts, week off US Open, get ready to potentially win your 20th Grand Slam with Murray potentially out and Wawrinka and Djokovic definitely out? What's the ideology there, you think, for Arfed and his camp? And do you see, how do you see this, next few weeks unfolding for him?
I think the most important thing with Arfet that you have to realize is if he wins his first round, he's going to win the tournament. I mean, isn't that true based on
Yes,
2017?
exactly. Well,
So
except for Donskoy, I think that match in Dubai earlier this year, I think he won his first match, and then he lost to him in maybe the quarters, and that was just like that was a major head scratcher too, because he had so many chances to put away Donskoy there, and he just couldn't do it. And till this day, Parsa, we're in August, and he's only lost to Donskoy and Tommy Haas, and where are those two guys right now, right? Like, Donskoy is playing, challenger somewhere, and Haas just lost in the first round of Kitzbühel. He said that I can't even play the tennis that I want to play right now. That might have been my last singles match. So
Wow.
we don't even know what's going on with Tommy. I hope he plays the U.S. Open to give himself the farewell that he deserves. But I mean, like, if you throw those two matches out, he's won everything this year. So you got that in the bag. Who's gonna really stop him here? Is his aura breakable? I don't think Nishikori can do it. Batista Agut will be able to push him because he's solid. Sock, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Sock played so well this tournament. He loses today to Anderson. He comes off the court and he says, "This is the worst court on tour, and I don't think I'm going to be back here next year." I'm like, "What is that?" Right? Like, what are you
Well,
saying? Like, what are you saying, man? Just because you lost, would he say that if he had won? I can guarantee you that he wouldn't have said that, right? So, I mean, he's got to get his act together a little bit too. Stop being such a, a sore loser. Anderson is a super rough customer, first of all. I mean, the guy is serving out of a tree, right? Like, so
and a
again,
great hard quarter.
and is a great hard courter, man. And he's a super hard worker. I mean, look, talk about a guy who's out there 5, 6 hours a day training, getting the absolute maximum out of himself is Kevin Anderson. And once again, tomorrow he's playing for the biggest title of his career against Alex Zverev. So we'll see how that one unfolds. But nevertheless, Sock, a dangerous guy here. I think he gets through the qualifier. Ferrer or Edmund, I think at this point you got to go with Edmund to get through that on a hard court. I don't know how well Ferrer's playing, even though he did manage to pick up a title a couple weeks ago in Bastad in Sweden. I think Sock gets through there to play Federer in the third round, but I mean, that 1-2 serve forehand by Federer, he's going to be all over Sock's backhand. And that's been Sock's, demise, that he can't get through the top guys with that vulnerability on his backhand, similar to a Steve Johnson, similar to a lot of Americans, actually. They don't have the best two-handers, in terms of around the world, except for like an Agassi, who was just off the charts. So I think if you look at it, it could be Nishikori in the quarters, Ryan Harrison, maybe. If he can toughen it out, I mean, he's serving well, ground strokes still not where they need to be. But I'm going Federer all the way through to the semis. What do you have?
And although intriguing, and I want to say that it's going to be someone other than Federer, there is going to be no one other than Federer. I think Federer is going to find his way through to the semi here, and I think he's going to play the same management company rival in Dimitrov in this bottom semi here.
Yeah. And he's just gonna roll them if that happens.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
it's really for Parsa. That's really the only thing that it's for, to be honest with you. It's a little bit of a grudge match.
Yeah. So far, in our final four, I have Nadal, Zverev, Burdick, and Federer. Whew.
Yeah.
So I'm going. Can we really have a Fidel final? I mean, is that what we're gonna call? I don't know. I mean, no, well, you don't, because you don't have Nadal making the semis. But for me, you know what? I'm taking Nadal to make the semis and become world number one, but I'm going to take Alex Zverev to upset Nadal and reach the finals. So Nadal becomes number one, but loses in the semis. Then I got Burdick and Federer. Obviously, I'm taking Federer to get through. And then we got a Zverev, kind of, the heir apparent to Federer. It looks like right now, anyways, right? I mean, he's the one guy we can say potentially a future number one for sure, with all the other guys that we can see before us. And I'm gonna take, gonna be a tough one. And Zverev, I think, has a great chance actually, but I'm going with Federer 7-5 in the third set. For you, just to recap quickly, you got Raonic, Alex Zverev, Dimitrov, and Federer. So how do you see that shaping up for you?
Yeah, I think it's despite a tough effort from Raonic, I think it's going to be Zverev going through the final, and I think Federer is going to absolutely just roll right through Dimitrov there. And I have a little bit different, Nima. I've got Mr. Zverev 7-6 in the third, taking the title.
Okay.
I think he's going to bring it, and he's going to bring the heat, and he's going to put some pressure on Federer, and I think he's just going to find a way. And probably the only way Federer will actually lose ever is going to be in some sort of final set tiebreak. And so we'll see how it plays out. But Zverev is clubbing the ball right now and only getting better. And so the
I
next
could,
logical step would be for him to take the title.
you know, I couldn't agree with you more, man. I'm just so impressed by him. He's got, Parsa, we talk about from our coaching perspectives, right? And by the way, everybody out there, Parsa is in Kalamazoo right now, which everybody in the States knows, a massive, junior tournament. Parsa, is this a tournament where the winner gets a wild card into the US Open?
That's right. You guys, everyone around the world actually will see the wild card from the United States is the winner of this tournament I'm at right now. And although no, knock on wood, the US prospects are a little light this year, so you may see the wild card get smushed in the main draw, depending on who he draws. But still nonetheless contentious, and you get the best US players in the world. I think there's, if I'm not mistaken, there's 10 of the ITF juniors top 40 in the world entered in this event. There are 10 Americans in the top 40,
Okay.
and they're all here. And so I, worldwide, I guess it's going to bring a very, very strong level of tennis here, and exciting for the fans of Kalamazoo, and exciting for the kids. They get to play for a main draw US Open wildcard.
And that goes for both, boys and girls, right? For both of them, right?
So the girls' event's out in San Diego,
Okay.
in La Jolla. So it's a totally different event.
Okay.
This one's so special because it's embraced by the community. Andy Roddick actually played an exhibition here tonight, and there's just thousands of people show up every day for the event. These are juniors, and they're signing autographs, and the community just really embraces this event, and it's amazing. Everywhere we go, if it's busy, they put you up at the front of the reservation line. They welcome you. They're just very, very happy to have you here, and that's pretty cool.
And you know what I'm going to say now? Why don't you have a tour event the week before and have all of these top prospect juniors practicing with some of the pros? I know the pros would love to hit with them. Great preparation for them for this week, right? That would be an amazing, lead up for all those players. So, I mean, these are the type of things, the USTA or whoever it is, you got to start thinking about the ATP, WTA. Let's get this going, guys, because, there's a lot of lost opportunities out there that you're just, in my opinion, really not capitalizing on. So hopefully it happens sooner rather than later. So Parsa, let's jump in now to the women's draw in Toronto, which is my backyard, about 15 minutes away from my home. Be checking that out for the rest of this week. So everybody out there, following us on Twitter and Instagram stories, make sure to hit us up there so you can catch some coverage from the Rogers Cup in Toronto. We got Karolina Pliskova, debuting for the first time in her career as the number one player in the world in a tournament, obviously seeded number one here. Very, I mean, if we talk about a lot of absences on the men's side in Montreal, don't have as many on the women's. Obviously, most notable, we have Sharapova, who was entered but withdrew, and then Serena, who obviously is awaiting, the birth of her child, so is not playing. But other than that, just, to read off the top 10 seeds, you have Pliskova, Halep, Kerber, Muguruza, Svitolina, Wozniacki, Konta, Kuznetsova, Venus Williams, Radwanska. And then, to keep it going, you have Sibulkova, Ostapenko, French Open winner, Mikhailovic, Kvitova, Sedasova, and Vesnina won Indian Wells earlier this year. So, I mean, you got some, this is an awesome draw. Just really depends on how everybody shows up and you know, how much they give importance to this week and how well they play. And I hope there's some great tennis for the fans in Toronto. So, Parsa, we have, you know, Pliskova in the always unpredictable WTA draws. How will this one unfold? You know what? I'm going to go on a limb, Parsa, and say that Pliskova is upset in her first match as the number one player in the world. And I think you're going to see two Mortoglu players that train there, and I mean they're ambassadors for the venue, with Pavlenchenkova and Elise Cornet, good friends. They, you know, they train there all the time together in the south of France, play off against each other. I think Pavlenchenkova gets through. I think Pavlenchenkova will upset Pliskova to move forward. That doesn't mean for me that she's making the semis, but I'm going with, you know, we also have in this quarter here, first quarter, we have Svetasova, we have Radwanska and Wozniacki. Wozniacki hasn't been able to get over that finish line, but she's been able to go deep in numerous events this year. I believe she's made 5 tour finals, but hasn't won any of them. I like her chances here on the hard court in Toronto, and I think she gets into the semifinals. Who do you have?
Very good, Nima. Yeah. You know, for me, it's always tricky. You know, who did you have going through, Nima, to the semi?
I have Wozniacki.
Very good. Yes. I have to go with a little bit of a, you know, of the best probably hardcourter there, Nima, and that is Pliskova, even though she's number one in the world. I think this is her most comfortable surface, and she's getting to this point now where she's getting back on the hard courts where she enjoys and plays great. And so I think that I'm going to go with Karolina Pliskova, although I do feel like that first match is an absolute trap match. After that, if she does get through that, I can't see her in the semis.
Yes, that is true. But there's, you know, there's some good, I mean, Coco Vandeweghe is going to be tough.
Bianca, that was going to be my second pick.
Bianca Andreescu. What do you think about her, Parsa? I'm sure, you know, you have some junior players talking about her. I mean, she's been doing really well. Almost made the semis in Washington, made the quarters, beat Mikhailovic convincingly. I mean, I think Canada's, you know, we talk about Bouchard, but I mean, if Bouchard doesn't get her act together, she's going to be overshadowed by, you know, Francois Abana and, you know, Bianca, because, I mean, they're both coming in nicely. And I think, you know, they're going to potentially be ranked higher than her, maybe even this time next year. So what are your thoughts on the young Canadians there, from what you've seen?
Yeah. You know, I've watched Abanda play quite a bit as I coached a player who has played her, who actually beat her last year.
Yes.
Abanda really goes for it and hits the ball, and she's not shy or afraid of any moment. And so that'll go a long way for her as her career continues to build. With Bianca Andreescu, I haven't watched her that much, Nima. What's her game style?
Just aggressive baseliner. And I mean, I think very talented, very athletic. And again, you know, when you're young, you have no fear, Parsa, right? You just go for it. You got, you know, you just go swinging for the fences. And if they're landing in the court, I mean, your shots are going to be just as good as anybody. So especially at this professional level. And I think, you know, that's what you're going to see with her. And she's got, you know, her draw is, it's, you know, Babos is, you know, veteran Hungarian player. I don't know how she's going to do there. Might lose first round, but she could definitely win. But I think it's going to be tough for her to get through, you know, Vandeweghe or Radwanska in round two. But I mean, at this point, even if she makes a second round, I think that's, you know, that's going to be a good effort, you know, for her. But saying that, we got to look at this quarter. For the quarter number two, we have Kerber. Again, we don't know how she's going to, you know, respond on this court. Now she's had a miserable year. For somebody who made 3 Grand Slam finals last year and won 2 of them. We have Konta, who's playing in Canada, I believe, for the first time. We have Suarez Navarro lurking here. We have Kvitova, Sibulkova. A lot of good players here. Safarova, Abana, as you had mentioned, Makarova. So a lot. This is a loaded quarter. I mean, a lot of things can happen here. Bouchard, who could play, you know, Kerber next round, but she's got a qualifier, which she could very well lose her first match. You hope she doesn't. I mean, you know, the Canadian fans, I can tell you right now, most of the Canadian fans are going to be coming out to see her this week. And the deeper she goes, you know, the more people are going to come out and watch this tournament. So I really hope that that does take place. But with that said, I don't know how Konta is going to respond since she's never played here. You know, Safarova has had some ties with, you know, Canadian coaches and stuff like that throughout the past. So let's see how she, you know, she responds. You know, Kvitova does like a fast hard court. So she could be a definite factor here. I really don't know. I mean, if I was going to guess and give an educated guess, I think I'm going to have to go with Konta to make the semifinals here. What's your pick?
Yeah, you know, the one player that stands out to me, believe it or not, is Kvitova. Maybe all summer, I think maybe I'll be picking her quite a bit. In that, you know, she's a pretty good fast court player. She can't defend as well.
Yes.
Which will hurt her. But I think, you know, she's wants to get her ranking back where it is, and in order to do that, she can do well at these events. And I think a semifinal finish would be a great result for her, and something to build on towards next week.
For sure. Okay, Parsa, we're moving on to quarter number three, led by Muguruza, who I believe is still in Washington, if I'm not mistaken. And we also have Svitolina, Venus Williams, Vesnina, and I mean a slew of other really good players. Honestly, we have Konju, who's Alison Risk. So we have some, you know, some heavyweights in this quarter. If I'm breaking this one down, I mean, you know, I've gone with Svitolina a ton of times this year. Like to see how she rebounds here, because again, as we've mentioned, there are definitely a lot of chances this summer leading all the way through to the end of the US Open for a lot of players, both on the men's and women's side, you know, to make a name for themselves if they haven't already. So do I take Svitolina? I'm not really sure. I mean, I think that would be, for me, the logical guess, just because, you know, I've believed in her throughout, you know, this season. Hasn't really done particularly well too often here in Canada. But I think, you know, I'll stay with her. You know, she's a good hardcore player, won, you know, three or four titles this year. So that will be my pick. What about yourself?
So do you think that Muguruza is going to have the Wimbledon hangover?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for her, she's a dynamite. She's won the French. She's won Wimbledon. You know, how is she doing the hard courts now? And it's, what have you done for me lately? Again, yeah, it could definitely happen. I mean, I think she's got a little bit more perspective now. And, you know, with Serena now out of the way for this year, a lot of players are like, okay, if Pliskova is number one, and, you know, no disrespect to her, why can't I do it, right? Because think about it like this. Muguruza has two Grand Slam titles. Pliskova has zero. And Pliskova's number one in the world, right? So why not, you know, why not her? Why can't she be number one in the world? If she has a good U.S. Open and a good leading, you know, a good summer series, I think she can definitely do that. So, I mean, there's no question that Muguruza can do well.
And for that reason, I pick Garbin Muguruza to go to the semi.
There you go.
Thank you for explaining for me.
Yeah, very good. And now we move on to the fourth and final quarter. We have Simona Halep, who had to withdraw from Washington with, I believe, some heat illness. Super hot. I mean, it was like 146 on court, Parsa. That's crazy. I mean, Bouchard was saying her, you know, her feet were like on fire. She was burning through the soles of her shoes, right? So it's insane conditions that a lot of these players have to deal with. But, you know, that's what you sign up for as you know, as a professional tennis player. You play all around the world in these crazy conditions, and, you know, they just throw you out there, and, you know, they make you go to work. So, yeah, I mean, this quarter again looks pretty good to me. We have Kuznetsova, who you can never really count out because she's that consummate professional playing with house money for the rest of her career. You have, you know, Bellis, who's, I mean, how well has she been playing lately, eh? Just, you know, great call on that one, by the way, eh? You had called that earlier this summer, and I really like what I'm seeing from her. And I really think that you know, she can do some damage. Well, Parsa, you know, I just want to just correct one thing quickly. I was talking about Washington. Muguruza was actually playing in Stanford. She lost today to Madison Keys, so she lost 3-2. And then Coco Vandeweghe is also in the finals, opposite of Madison Keys, and she's playing against. She beat Cece Bellis today, 3-1. So Cece Bellis had beat, I believe, Kvitova yesterday. She absolutely rolled her 2-0, which is a, you know, very impressive result for the young American, and that's never an easy feat to accomplish. So we got Madison Keys and Coco Vandeweghe coming in hot to Toronto. They'll contest the Stanford final tomorrow over there. So yeah, I mean this is for me. I mean, Halep, I think, you know, you're gonna have much more calm conditions here in Toronto because we've had an absolutely, you know, terrible cool summer, a lot of rain, you know, low 70s. Pretty much the entire summer, so I don't think you're gonna have a lot to deal with there in terms of conditions. You're just gonna be, you know, a lot of rain delays and whatnot. But let's not forget about Ostapenko. For me, Parsa, with Ostapenko, she looks relaxed. I saw some footage of her practicing out here over the weekend. I think for me, you know, analyzing her game, groundies, I think work on anything: ice, grass, you know, fire, hard courts, whatever you put her on. Not too crazy about her serve, though. She's got really, like, that kick motion, you know what I'm saying? It's very convoluted, a lot of different moving parts. I think she's going to have to tighten that up as she moves forward if she wants to really nail, you know, the other surfaces. On clay, it works because it gives you that time and, you know, to build up the point. But I'm not really sure how it's going to transcend into the hard courts. She's got a pretty decent draw. I mean, Garcia is not going to be easy in round two, but it's definitely a winnable match for her. And then we got Cece Bellis or Kuznetsova in the third round. So a lot of good matches up, man, in Toronto. I think, you know, for fans of the WT, I think you're in store for some fantastic tennis this week. If I'm going to break down my semifinalist, Madison Keys is also lurking there. She's unseeded, Parsa. I mean, against Lucic Baroni, another great first round match. Halep, I mean, you know, that's going to be a tough one right there. Simona, depending on how she's feeling, I think I gotta take her. I think I'm gonna go with her to the semifinals. And I'll tell you who she's gonna, you know, how she'll do from there. But what's your call as for this final and fourth and final quarter?
Yeah, you know, for me too. That's while you were talking, the person that stands out to me is I gave Kuznetsova in terms of I think she'll grind out a couple matches, maybe.
Yes.
But she will definitely put in the effort. I think Cece Bellis is going to try to make a name for herself, but I'm not sure she's going to win this type of thing. Yeah. I'm sure Ostapenko wants to show off how she translates onto the hard courts. But for me, the one that's really, if there has been a consistent one, it would be Simona Halep, and therefore I've got her in the semi. I think she's going to be the one that's going to go deep here, deep next week, and deep at the U.S. Open.
Yes. Okay. So,
although Keys is a problem for her, in a first round match like that, it's a big problem, but Keys could be a little bit fatigued. So Halep for me.
Exactly. Those were actually my sentiments too about Madison, even though I would love to see her, you know, do well. Again, this is the US Open series. Really nice if you get some US players going deep in these big tournaments, you know, to then correlate and, you know, really attach to the American public and really get them pumped up to come out to these events and support it. So we have, for me, Parsa, I'll give you my final four. I have Wozniacki, Konta, Svitolina, and Halep. I'm going to go with Wozniacki to get through Konta. I have Halep getting through Svitolina. I have a Wozniacki-Halep final. And once again, I'm going to have Wozniacki losing her sixth final of the season to Halep. As the defending champion, I think she repeats. And she's going to take this one home and be in nice pole position, you know, for the U.S. Open coming up in a few weeks' time. How about yourself? So just to recap, Parsa, you have Pliskova, Kvitova, Muguruza, and Kuznetsova.
Yeah, and for me, I'm going to have Pliskova upending Kvitova, and I'm going to have her playing. I'm going to have her playing Garbina Muguruza, and over Halep there and I'm gonna have Pliskova defending that number one title and winning her. I don't know if she's won a Rogers Cup before, but I think she's gonna win 2017.
Okay, there you have it.
Okay, guys, so Parsa and I will be back next week to recap the Rogers Cup in both Toronto and Montreal, and then get ready for Cincy. As we know right now, it's pretty much full steam ahead. You're going to get a lot of podcasts from us in the coming 4 or 5 weeks, which is great. We enjoy doing these and giving you guys what you want out there. So make sure to listen and be ready for those. In the meantime, Parsa and I, again, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. And I just want to add that we love getting those questions, and we want to hear the feedback, and don't be afraid to send them.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. And, we have been getting those on Twitter a lot, so that's fantastic. So keep sending those through. I'd like to give a big shout out to our sponsor this week, Grand Slam Tennis Tours. Parsa, they're also hosting this really cool exhibition event from the 22nd to the 24th of August in Stowe, Vermont. You've got the likes of Charity, Jared Donaldson, TFO, Tommy Haas, Ramos Vinolas, a lot of really great players playing in an XO for 2 or 3 days and a lead up right before in New York. And it's a really cool event. They've laid down this really nice court, very intimate setting. So, tennis is coming back to Stowe, Vermont. So make sure to check that out. If you're in the area or if you want to get down, just check out Grand Slam Tennis Tours for that info as well.
That's a great job by them, Nima.
Yeah, it's a fantastic job. And, Andrew Chimero, who's the president there, is an awesome guy, huge tennis fan. And, he loves the sport and he tries to do as much as he can for it. So a big shout out once again to them. And finally, they also have some fantastic packages to the US Open. So anybody still looking to get that all sorted out, make sure to hit them up for that. Finally, make sure to hit up Parsa at Parsa Sammy on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also check out Tennis Connected on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, our actual website. I'll have a review up of the 2018 Pure Drive, which is a very sought-after frame from a lot of people. That's the number one selling racket in the world, so make sure to check out and watch out for that. A couple other gear reviews, and we're going to have some great articles from our staff throughout the next few weeks. So once again, thank you so much for listening. Make sure to also download us on iTunes and subscribe to that. And we'll chat with you guys next Sunday. Be good and enjoy the tennis. We'll be right back.